Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
Today, well, we got a couple announcements first. We got a couple shows that are coming up that we are excited about.
Yes.
One is next week, we will be discussing Killing the Savior Complex. And that is a show about the fatigue that arises from trying to save the world. As we age, that may look a little different to us. Some of our priorities may shift.
Yeah.
And so we have a conversation about what that looks like to be that savior and sometimes take a break from being a savior.
Yeah.
We also have a new Faith Stories coming up. So Faith Stories is our series where we talk to people with interesting faith backstories to discuss their histories and how they got to the point of belief where they are now.
Yes.
So we've had people who grew up Christian and Catholic and no faith at all, Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always have interesting stories. This one is a special Faith Stories because it's Amira and I.
Ours.
So we're going to be joined by our friends over at the Brown Liquor Report. They are going to interview us and we will tell the whole story. So be looking out for those.
Yes.
We also have a couple new ventures that we are going to announce.
Yes.
I'll let you go first.
Okay. So my experience with Faith Uncut has given me the confidence and the, I guess, the mantle. We have some things to discuss about Black women and how they interact with institutions and organizations, not least of which is politically. And what that means for our community as a whole. So I will be launching The Body Politic.
I love it. I love it. We finally got an announcement. This has been in the works for a while.
Yes, it has.
Okay.
Yes, it has. I'm excited to do it and just get it going. But yes, it's been in the works for quite some time. But the time is prescient for us to begin to discuss how Black women are not just the backbone of our churches or even our communities, but we have political importance in this American story. So we're going to dig deep.
Of special importance now with current events that we are going to talk a little bit about today. Also, in the announcements phase, new ventures, we have myself and the Count are huge nerds. And so we have all these conversations about the media that we're consuming, Marvel, DC, you know, just nerd shit. And so,
blurred shit.
So we decided to start a podcast called The Social Justice League. That podcast is available now on all the platforms. We have a couple episodes up. We do reviews of the content and we talk about how those themes sometimes intersect with the lives that we're living.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that means from a blurred point of view.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's fun. We have fun. This is so Faith Uncut, we do a lot of serious work and we love it. We have fun doing it.
Yes.
And I can also let my bald hair down differently on a Social Justice League because we just talking nerd shit. So
yes.
Yeah, check those out. Be looking out for Body Politic. That is coming soon.
Yes.
And
I'm excited.
I am Woo-hoo. Too. I'm happy. All right. So let's talk about theocracy.
Yes.
Great. We have been living in a time where things are changing rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of decisions coming out of the Supreme Court, highly conservative Supreme Court, that impact the way we move in this American life. The end state appears to be to transition the United States of America into a white conservative Christian theocracy.
Okay.
What is a theocracy? A theocracy is a state that's governed by people who believe that they are divinely directed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the decisions that come out of their politics reflects their faith or the faith of the majority of those in charge.
Yeah.
And so when we see theocracies in like Saudi Arabia, that's an Islamic theocracy.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that's not the case in America. We have a conservative right Christian wing that has been working very hard to bring us to this point.
Yes.
And so they are They're doing the job that they came to do.
Yep.
You want to run us through some Supreme Court decisions to show how we got here so quickly?
Oh, geez. Okay.
It appears quickly, but it's not quickly. But
no,
let's talk about the decisions.
No, it's not quickly at all. So, you know, we've been talking about our body of work and going back to previous seasons and episodes that we've had. So I feel like we have discussed the rise of the right and the legitimizing of previously, you know, the legitimizing of political positions that previously were anchored in, let's say, a church politic or in a certain type of lifestyle or a certain type of your community or, you know, the people you agree with could have a pact to live their lives a certain way. But increasingly, these agreements are extending past the home, past the immediate community, past the immediate church, even past local and state politics. So now we have a national landscape that is being directly impacted by a very small but powerful group of politically connected leaders who are now imposing their worldview on the greater majority of Americans who have already, you know, done their own work, because I don't think this is as easily seen as right or left. But I do believe that a greater majority of Americans who are participating in a more secular lifestyle and understand the separation of church and state have added back to our American life that we have access to certain civil rights. We have access to certain relief from our institutions. And what we're seeing now is a journey backward to where certain protections are being rolled back or now being questioned. And like Mike said, this started years ago and it started very, very quietly. And you didn't hear so much behind the scenes, but there were things happening that now that the Supreme Court is now stacked 6-3, we're starting to see the fruits of this labor mm-hmm. happening. So recently, there have been some decisions recently. Of course, everybody knows off the top that a few weeks ago, the country has been roiled by the falling of Roe v. Wade and what that means for health care, health access, children's health, mm-hmm. And just all across the board. But there have been some other decisions, too. So one of which is Kennedy versus Bremerton School District, which was the case about the coach wanting to pray at the 50-yard line.
Right. So he's in Kitsap County, Washington. The coach started with an initial, it was his prayer that he prayed at the end of the games on the 50-yard line. Eventually, some of the players felt that they wanted to join in. The school board tried to get him to stop that practice because there's a power dynamic at play whenever mm-hmm. you have school leaders, administrators, teachers doing something where it's kids or students being coached, that it just feels like maybe you have to participate.
Right.
So the school district tried to get him to stop. He would not stop. And he was ultimately relieved of his job. He went to court. That case went up through the judiciary and ended up at the Supreme Court, where they ruled that he did have a right to engage in that activity. So it was a constitutionally protect prayer now is a constitute prayer in schools is a constitutionally protected activity.
Mm-hmm.
The issue here is now districts are legally obligated to allow employees to inject their personal religious expression into school events, which, as we said, that ignores the dynamics at play.
Yeah.
For students and teachers.
And teachers. It could affect your employment. It could affect your ability to participate, your ability to be seen as equal, and its undue influence in such a controlled environment. Because what if your lack of participation is used to impact your grades? What if your lack of participation is seen as hostile mm-hmm. to whomever is, you know, leading the prayer? And I feel like the silent elephant in the room is that we are just talking about this being a Christian reflection mm-hmm. of faith. I do not believe that this case would have been overturned or would have been affirmed, rather, if we were talking about a Muslim coach who was praying at the 50-yard line facing east and some of his players wanted to join in. I just don't see how that same case would have been affirmed by this court.
So I hope we find out what that looks like as.
Oh yeah, because now that you can do it,
yeah, just do it. You can do.
Hate
all
to
of,
say
all
that,
of
but
the
like,
prayers.
Yeah, I mean, now we have to test the durability of what these cases, you know, have allowed our actions to be. And this is where you establish precedent. This is why it takes years and years and years to move cases up through circuits and up to the Supreme Court, because you have to create, or situations are created, where we test the validity of the question. And when you test the validity of the question and you subject it to review, that's basically why you ask the Supreme Court to have a say,
right,
on a case.
So prayers back in schools. They prefer Christian prayer. We will see what happens.
We will see what happens.
The next case is Carson versus Mankin. This is not a Supreme Court case. This is a First Circuit Court of Appeals in Maine. Basically, this case allows public funding to be used for private schools.
Mm-hmm.
The situation in Maine, in a lot of these rural areas, they don't have public schools that service the entire district. And in this case, they did not. They did have private schools, and they were unable to receive federal funding for the schools, which serviced all of the kids in the, well, not all, majority of the kids in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And so this First Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that they are now able to use those funds for public schools. Now, we talked about this in our abortion episode, where the Christian right, the moral majority at the time, minority at the time, wanted to use Bob Jones University as basically a segregation academy.
Yep.
So they wanted to keep black students out of the schools, and the United States government said, well, you can do that, but you were going to lose your tax status.
Yep.
And so they ended up losing that case in court, decided to go another way and pivot towards the abortion issue. Now, with this Carson versus Mankin decision of the First Circuit Court of Appeals, it looks like private schools or religious schools can now receive this federal funding for education, which is going to open up a lot of opportunity for
school choice.
Yes. So
vouchers. This has been at the state level, there's been an effort, and under 45's administration, when we had DeVos as the Secretary of Education, her position in her personal life and some of the policies that she was representing outside of her cabinet seat was that we should be allowed to use federal funds to send our kids to the schools that we want to send them to, which is an idea that is born out of this concept of a segregation academy, where by and large, white families stopped participating in public education when schools became desegregated, and they began to put their students in private academies where federal dollars and federal rules did not dictate who got to go to school, because now you're not talking about separate but equal facilities for black and white students publicly funded with federal dollars. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about the Red Christian Academy, which is a private school. It receives no public funding, so they maintained a little bit more of their control. At this point, a lot of different mostly GOP-led state legislatures have been trying to backdoor that and say, okay, you've established precedent with special circumstances that allow for public funds to be used for private education when certain services are not delivered. The argument is that certain services are not being delivered, such as we are not getting the curriculum that we want. So
right,
we want to fund, you know, our students going to private schools.
So I want you to keep in mind that the backdrop to this is effort or desire to discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
That was what was at issue in the Bob Jones University case. That is still at issue. So what we will see, or what we expect to see after this decision, is at first schools will admit, you know, Christian students. Maybe they will deny admission to Muslim students. Mm-hmm. Maybe they will deny admission to students who disagree with the determined Christian values of that school. So, for instance, LGBTQ plus persons may not be admitted. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to discriminate is on the heels of this decision. And that's one of the things that we'll see. And it'll be based on an arbitrary or a specific interpretation of what Christian values are. Mm-hmm. All right. We also know in the Masterpiece Bayshop versus Colorado civil rights Commission, that was the case, the Supreme Court case, where the bake shop won the ability to discriminate against LGBTQ persons who wanted a cake made. This is, I don't know, it's very obvious what's happening.
That particular case was one of the earlier decisions. This happened years ago. But the argument was that the baker had the right to decline to make the cake. And I believe that a lot of people probably on their face agreed with that. The problem is the slippery slope. You don't get the cases that we just discussed without that bakery case. So, which was why, you know, people were arguing at the time, no, you cannot allow this business to discriminate against potential customers, because not because of them saying, I don't want the business. Most private business owners will tell you all money is not good money. You know, they don't necessarily want a relationship with this type of client, or they don't want to deal with a certain type of behavior. However, the slope, the slippery slope that has now been created is now that we're saying, I don't have to serve you. You are no longer going to experience civil rights protections guaranteed by the 14th Amendment because I don't feel like it. So that's a bigger issue than just don't make my cake.
Yeah. So there are other issues, other cases coming down. I have a case about Vega versus Toca, which is a voting rights case, which we know the Supreme Court has been hostile towards voting rights. In this case, it was a 6-3 decision that ruled that Americans, this is a new one, that Americans do not have the right to Miranda when being arrested. We see this in TV all the time. You know, you have the right to remain silent, et cetera, when you get arrested. And that's to inform you of your rights so that you do not incriminate yourself for the upcoming legal proceeding. Now, we have the right to remain silent, and now so do the police based on this ruling. And so, there are a series of disconcerting rulings coming out of the judiciary, and they are leading to this point of management by religion. And so we are transitioning to theocracy, and we got to talk through what that looks like for us. What does that mean? Why is that a bad thing? I don't want this.
No, not only do we not want this, but the founding fathers didn't want it either. And I believe that, you know, I have a friend and we talk about it all the time, where over the last 30 years, so much of the commentary and the critique of public education was that we need to focus on science and tech. And that is of no affront to you. However, by not focusing on civil education and understanding how your government works and understanding how we established this American life and the importance of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, now you have people misquoting and misinterpreting history. So America, by and large, was founded by people who were seeking religious freedom. Religious freedom is not just the freedom to perform your faith as you see fit. It is also the freedom to be free of the performance of faith, if that's what you, or the performance of religion, if that's what you so choose. And as America has become more diverse, unfortunately, there are people who feel like this country is no longer the country that they recognize or have, they've idealized, or even that they've idolized, because the leadership now looks different. The rules look different as we even the playing field, evening the playing field so that everybody can have a chance might feel like robbery to people who've always had a chance and didn't have to worry about competition. So that's kind of where we are now. But it is a misinterpretation of American history to say that the founding fathers would have been supportive of a theocracy. The number one reason why Britain is not a party to the Roman Catholic system is because at one point in time they had a monarch that wanted to keep getting married because he was a tramp. But also politically, he did not want to maintain any alliances that he that did not serve him after a certain amount of time. And it was worth it to him to detach from the Roman Catholic Church and establish the Anglican Church so that he could be free of the Pope having the last word over certain political and socio-political actions under his crown. That's big, important stuff. And we don't really get into that when we're teaching history. Fast forward to the establishment of America, we did it again. We said, okay, We don't want to be under the crown. We don't want to be under the wiles of a king who, where our national interests or our emerging national interests have to line up with Great Britain's, with which have to line up with whatever's going on geopolitically within Europe, which at the time had a monarchical system. So we said no. And we went through the trials and tribulations of what it would mean to give to establish a nation, a new nation. Part of what we held close to was the fact that we are free to be as religious or not as we wanted to. That led to the establishment of rights for human beings without qualification, who they're affiliated with, how much money they have. So even though we know that we had a system that had that that really was kind to landowners and really kind to wealthy people, as we began to continuously write laws and establish a legal culture around what it meant to be an American, this was a land where you could participate without paying so much attention to your affiliations. What school did you go to, or had you been schooled? What churches did you go to, or do you affiliate with a religion? And this was the gift. This is a part of America's branding. This is what went out all over the world and said, this is the greatest country in the world, because you can come here from India or the Indian subcontinent and you don't have to stop being Hindu or Muslim to be here. You can build your temples here. Your children can be educated in your culture and in your religion, and you can be an American too. You don't have to stop, you know, being Buddhist. You can come here and do that if you so choose. If you don't choose to adhere or to acknowledge a God or whatever the case might be, that's absolutely fine, because these rights are provided for you because you are an American, because you have been born into or naturalized or whatever. That's how your system works. But if I undereducate you on how it works, then you can misinterpret how not only it works for you, but how it's supposed to work for somebody else. Yep. And that's why we're here, because trust and believe, the people who are making these moves are very, very intelligent. The people who are mindlessly mimicking them and screaming at the top of their lungs don't even have the same amount of connection, the same amount of formal education. I'm not saying that's the qualifier. I'm saying that you can whip people up into a frenzy because it sounds good. But if they don't know the actual facts and foundation, they won't even know what they're cheering for.
Yeah. So that's the first reason. The country wasn't founded on that. This idea of theocracy is antithetical to the founding of the country. Second reason is we haven't really done a good job of defining what this means. Like, this is not, this theocracy appears to be Christian, but as we discussed in our American Civil Religion episode, this is an American civil religious theocracy, which is such a nebulous concept to most people. So it looks like Christianity, but it doesn't function like that.
No, not at all.
For instance, Jesus didn't care about guns. There's no guns. You know what I mean? Like, it was, Jesus didn't care about the gays or not letting them have cake. Right. There was, Jesus never said anything about abortion. These are not Christian issues. Nope. These are issues that have been made to be Christian issues by Americans who believe that their faith has something to say about them. I would argue that in many cases, their faith either has nothing to say or says the opposite of what they're trying to make it say.
Absolutely.
And so when the theocracy is mired in esoteric religion, or religion that is not even defined. Like, I couldn't tell someone, you know, in the Bible Belt, that you're practicing American civil religion, and they say, oh, okay, yeah, sure. They wouldn't believe me. They would think that they're just Christian. And so they're moving towards a Christian relegated state. And that's not the case. So it's going to be even harder to change what needs to be changed when we can't even agree on the language of what it is that we're working towards or moving towards. The third reason why I don't want any parts of this is because theocracies historically fail spectacularly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't work. They've never worked. They function in dysfunction, and then the empire falls. So we saw this in 4th century Rome, when after Constantine decided to declare Christianity the official religion of Rome following the Council of Nicaea, we saw that Rome was quickly taken over by Assyria. So historian Edward Gibbon says, well, he pointed to Christianity, or the adoption of Christianity as a national religion, as an overconfident, intolerant Christianity and it was the cause of their imperial decline. So the way that theocracies work is through coercion, and they coerce the citizens into a mode that does not apply to the body. And that works to accelerate the problem. So, for instance, in a case where you kick all the Muslims and the Jews out of the country, and you think you've solved the problem, you left with either Christians or Catholics, depending on who's in power and who has the theocracy reigns at that point. There's going to be disagreement within those faiths because it assumes that all Christians or Catholics think the same way. And that is not the case. Catholics thought the same way, you would never have the Protestant Reformation from Martin Luther, who was Catholic. If all Jews thought the same way, you would never have Jesus, who had different ideas about how the faith should operate. And so there you will never reach a point where you can be settled on the faith construction of a country. You would always have to deal with dissenters. And the answer is going to be either kick them out or assuage them. And so it just never works. In Spain, it didn't work in the 17th century. So what happened is in Spain, this was a Catholic theocracy, and they prospered greatly during the 17th century. Everything was great. This is a case where they kicked the Muslims and the Jews out of the country. All the Catholics are there partying. It's a great time. Economic conditions in the 18th century changed the way things worked. So people started dying. They moved out of the country. More people of other faiths moved into the country. The people that are left, the preachers and the ministers of clergy that are left, they saw the economic and social decline of Spain, and they attributed that to God. Because that's what you do. Because in a theocracy, you believe that you are operating independently of the economic and social and environmental forces that are around you. And so your concept of the world is dependent on the movement of your God. And so as God is pleased with you, you prosper. If God is dissatisfied with you, you have problems. And so it's impossible to work in a situation like this where you don't account for all of the variables that impact your citizenry.
So a good example of that is what we discussed when we were talking about climate change and why we do not, why certain policymakers do not make climate change one of their priorities, as far as what are we saying about how we care for the earth? What are we saying about being good stewards over over even the little things, where we are jeopardizing clean air, clean water, healthy environments for money? And this fits right into what we're saying about American civil religion versus what might be an actual Christian belief and value set, where American civil religion wants to win. And what is underpinning that is not Christianity. It is corporate. It's corporate Christianity, but it's capitalism. So it's an economic system that wants to win, that's willing to co-opt the imagery of Christianity as something that, you know, apparently on its face, we could agree upon, as long as we don't look behind the scenes. When we look behind the scenes, what you're going to see is a machine that just wants to be fed. The machine wants fuel. It doesn't care where it comes from. So you can kid yourself and think, I can appease this capitalist machine by, like we said, kicking out all of the nonconformists, or by drowning out all the dissent. But the machine does not care. It will want to be fed. So eventually it's going to be like, ah, give me your kids.
Give me a nice Christian kid.
Yeah, give me your kids. Give me the ones who are shorter than what we say the new standard is. Give me. And it sounds so, this will sound, you know, so far-fetched to a person who's like, no, we would never be that petty. But we're that petty right now. We are headed into these dubious standards of what it means to be able to participate in the American society, according to standards that, you know, I could come up with them, Mike could come up with them. They're not legally tested. We feel this way on Tuesday. We don't feel this way next week. And unfortunately, if our power players are at the helm, when we change our mind, that changes things for everybody. So like we said, we've been, people who've been clocking these small changes have been doing so since the 70s. They've been saying, ah, you changed the rules for social support. You changed the rules for housing access. You changed the rules for food access.
you change the rules for how we count and how we penalize the least of these. How, you know, if somebody runs afoul of the law doing the same thing as someone else, now we have differences upheld by the law that say, I'll treat you worse than I treat this other person. All of these knots had to be undone. But before they're undone, there are always people who say, I haven't gotten a chance to participate. If I participate now, I end up in the power class. And that's kind of what you're seeing. It, even from January 6th, a complete misinterpretation of what it means to be a revolutionary, a complete misinterpretation of what it means, of what happened in 1776. These people were more like red coats, right? But you can't tell them that because they've identified and they say, I am the rebel. I am the person who's on the right side of the issue or the story. This is the problem that we're saying with this very convenient lens on your Christianity, where if you can't see in some of these stories that America is actually Egypt and not Israel in some of these stories, you're never going to get it right. So that's where we are.
Mm-hmm. So as we said, this we did not get here overnight. This is the result of a 50-year sustained effort by the part of conservatives to structure this court in a way that was hospitable to their beliefs.
The court, not even the legislatures. Legislatures, they were winning battles, but courts, these are appointed judges, lifetime appointments.
Yeah, so we got to talk about, and maybe this is a topic for body politic, but judicial supremacy is not the law of the land, and just because we understand it to be. Mm-hmm. Just because the Supreme Court has ruled a certain way, that does not mean that Congress cannot do another thing.
Right.
And so that's why you hear talk of Congress should act.
Right. Codifying access.
Right. And, mm-hmm. So just starting with Reagan, we believed that the court's ruling was the final ruling, but that's not the way that the framers set up the country. So there's checks and balances, and not just in who gets on the court, but it's also in where the court's limits are. And so we do have a Congress that can work on our behalf. We just don't have that Congress right now.
Hmm.
So what can be done about this mess that has been made of our democracy? My first issue is, I am not convinced that we have the stamina for this type of fight. And the reason why is because in the summer of 2020, I watched well-meaning white people who had never done justice work before hit the streets after being in the house for, during a pandemic to protest the police killings of black people. And I watched them and I said to myself, they don't have the stamina for this.
Mm.
People have been fighting this fight since mm-hmm. we were snatched and brought here in 1619, and it's still a fight. Mm-hmm. So I know that these people who have never fought are not in fighting shape. That same logic applies to the larger body of well-meaning Democrats, independents who may be outraged at the direction that the country is moving in.
Mm-hmm.
These people complain, but they don't act.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I know that there's a difference is because I am black, and many, many, many black people in America have the burden of working a full-time job and then coming home to work justice work
mm-hmm.
for their communities, for our communities, for our families. And so we don't get the luxury of just relaxing. We have to always work. And that's just been life.
Mm-hmm.
Some people actually have to forego dreams. Maybe they wanted to be a doctor or astronaut or something, and they end up in justice work because that work is that important
mm-hmm.
that dreams are deferred. But that's how we've lived our lives, with sacrificing those things that we want in the time that we have to do work that is necessary. And so I am not convinced that the people who are up in arms about what's going on are in fighting shape to do the to complete or compete in the fight that is we're currently in.
So I think it's important to say right there that lack of access also helps to build up your stamina. Lack of relief also helps to build up your stamina. So just right there, the reason why we knew that it couldn't be sustained is because it was fairly new to a great number of those people who finally had the time, because we had slowed down so much.
Mm-hmm.
We had slowed down so much they couldn't turn away. And they said, what can I do? You know, they were asking all across social media. And like we said, like you said, they were actually literally in the streets. Again, I don't ever want to get away from it. Like, yo, the system came back stronger and harder. Like, no more of that. No more of that. So I feel like when we say there's no stamina there for it, it's because how many of us have felt even more burdened as we reemerge and still trying to get through an active pandemic and still trying to get through, you know, current situations where we're like, yo, can we refute this? I always will say that we can, but by and large, stamina is an important question. Those of us who have always experienced difficulty with access or difficulty with relief already know not to expect shit to change instantly.
Right. And they also expect for that machine to morph when you put a dent in it. It will change and protect itself and evolve into something even more challenging for the next run. And so that mental fortitude is required to get through the initial trauma and then the re-traumatization based on the fact that you did all of this work. You thought you made a difference. And now here you are having to fight a bigger monster.
Mm-hmm.
That mental fortitude is something that's
I'm not trained. Saying that we all have it, but you got to work on
it. That's not something that you just have because you was in the house watching TV anyway and happened to see this thing. And so you got out in the streets, which, again, thankful for allies, and also understand the reality that these are not fighters that we have right now. We just don't have allied fighters right now. We have allied people who, in many cases, are not used to being at this level of alertness, are not used to being navigating this type of trauma, carrying it with you everywhere you go, and just the anger that comes by being forced to live in this position. How could they have that? I have to ask, is that a reasonable expectation for them to have the same motivation to get the foot off their neck when the foot has never been on their neck?
Absolutely.
I am going to get that foot off my neck at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's optional for me, I might get tired. I might want to go watch something else. You know what I mean? So that's one of the realistic challenges that we have. We have people who are willing to come alongside us, but their muscles have either atrophied or they never had them.
Say that. Okay.
The next question we have is, do we have the time for this fight? We said this was the culmination of a 50-year effort. Do we have another 50 years to wait? Do we want to watch it rights erode for another 50 years and see what this court is capable of or what the next president is capable of? Mm-mm. People are going to be dying. People have already started being impacted in their health care by the ruling.
Absolutely. But when you look at it from an empire falling standpoint, this is the collateral damage of things have falling so that they can be rebuilt. So we already said some things are going to have to go away. And we have the opportunity to build better, to build something else. Everything is not going to be subject to modification. So when you say, do we have time? Not the way that we've experienced time that got us to this point. What we have is opportunity. Where have you planted your seeds? Right. Because we already said in previous episodes, we might not be here to see the results of the work that we put in to make sure that things don't go all the way a certain way. But we have to still plant the seeds, till the ground. We have to tend to the plants. So it gets almost cliche like, oh, the children are the future, but they are. What are you teaching your kids? Mm-hmm. What are you teaching your kids? So like that whole breakdown we did earlier about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, this, that, and the third. People have been doing that and they've been misinterpreting where those rights came from and how they are to be applied. And they did that with their children, and their children have come of age and have added formal education to that stuff that was being taught to them in non-formal settings. They have impacted policy. They have impacted how we move about in this life. We're going to have to do the same thing. It's just like when you had multicultural curriculums emerging, people were like, oh, I want my kids to read these types of books by Black authors and da, da, da. We was already doing that at home. We just wanted them to read some of the same stuff at school. Right. So it's the same thing. What are you teaching your kids? What is your legacy? I'm so huge on creativity. Mike has been a huge support to me in just getting these creative things out. Like, y'all, we got to create so that people will know and come back to what we wrote and what we said and what we offered to the universe. Like, this is how it was, but this is how it could be. That's just like how I'm coming, you know, wrapping myself back up in Octavia Butler's work. She is, like we said, like an oracle, like prophetic with the things that she said in this time. But it gives me great comfort to know that she was thinking about this time. Something about being able to see it 40 years ago.
Yeah, people made a big deal after the 2016 election about the book 1984, George Orwell's 1984. I challenge people to go back and read Octavia Butler's The Parable of the Sower and see how equally, if
not
more prescient,
in the first 20 pages, I'm floored, like, yo, how did you just know it? But that to me says there's power in seeing. There's power in what we call Afrofuturism. How do we see this future? How are we going to participate? How are we going to be here?
Yeah. So the time question also brings with it the challenge of climate that we're seeing. As of this recording today, when we're recording this, Europe has broken heat records as they're in a record heat wave. France is undergoing the same thing. And so we definitely do not have another 50 years to slow walk.
Collateral damage.
Right.
How long are y'all going to let these organizations that act like they're not going to be privy to the same heat waves or to the same water rising or to the same bad air? How long y'all gonna let them run what you got going on?
So are we ready to take the medicine that we need at this point? And to me, that medicine is doing the difficult job of voting for candidates that you are not excited about. We see inaction in Congress. We see inaction and sometimes at the executive level, for instance. When the Supreme Court decision came down, it took 2 weeks for us to hear something out of the White House, even though the decision leaked 2 months ago. So they should have had something on deck for that. And so when we see this inaction or slow action, it's difficult to get excited about candidates for voting, because does the answer really seem to be more Democrat? When we gave y'all all the Democrats you need and we still didn't get anything for it. We got some COVID relief. We didn't get Build Back Better. You know what I mean, we didn't get voting rights. We didn't get any. I didn't get school loans.
Because
you got
wolves in sheep's clothing too.
Right. So while the executive could have done something about school loans or student debt, they haven't. Nope. And now here we are getting campaign donation requests again.
Nope.
That was the money that you.
I'm paying. Got it.
Yeah. So as we go through these election cycles, and again, that conservative. Right, did that for decades. They were voting,
but
they were losing. They kept voting and they kept losing.
So we had talked about, so to your point, when we say voting for candidates that you're not excited about, I think the most glaring example of this is the 2016 election, because people were very, very clear after watching the maneuvering that McConnell did in 2015, withholding the Supreme Court seat from Merrick Garland under Obama. We said, oh, they get ready to play dirty, dirty. Please do not try to get all of your small appeasement for your issues taken care of in this particular election. And people were so loud. No, I'm not voting for Hillary. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. And we said, the Supreme Court. Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court. And it was this kind of like this cognitive dissonance that you could get the president that you wanted without paying the real price for it, which is how does their power interact with the other two branches of government? Now we're here. We're here where we got three straight conservative justices, and it's almost as if it took the shackles off of other justices who were just waiting for some backup. This would not have happened without an election where people really kidded themselves and said, we'll have another opportunity to fix it. So when we say, you know, you might have to do the unpopular thing it's for the greater good. That to me is a part of why the concept of body politic is coming up, because that exit poll don't lie. Mm-hmm. Black women do things for the greater good. We are literally at the bottom of the ship. So how we behave politically usually has implications for everybody. You're talking about trickle down politics, trickle down economics. That Reaganomics thing is how black women vote and how we move politically, because we got to think for everybody so that we can get something by the time it reaches us. And that's amazing, because we continue to show up when people don't show up for us. And people not voting a certain type of way in 2016 was for sure about not showing up for us. We understood it, but the people who withheld that from us didn't understand that.
We have a problem listening to black people in this country, and specifically black women, who are directing us into the direction of right. And so that we suffer for that at so many points. We vote on our feelings. We vote on things that even at getting out in the street in summer 2020, it was a moment where people felt like they were together for one cause. And then when they felt a different feeling, black people stuck out here in the world is just as dangerous, and everybody else went on to other things.
Mm-hmm.
Shit don't change. Like, so we still navigating the trauma. We still in the Thunderdome, you know, fighting every day. And so I'm not hopeful that we can sustain what we need to get through this. I mean, we don't play the long game.
Mm-hmm.
We feel a certain way and we vote that way. Like you said, with the Supreme Court, we missed the issue that the Supreme Court is likely going to change during this next presidency. Mm-hmm. And we just did something else.
And it did.
We didn't like Hillary.
And we didn't even get the decisions under that administration. We got the people. He put his pawns in place, but we didn't get the decisions. Now here we are with the president that a lot of people held their nose to vote for because they said, oh my God, enough is enough. But the pawns were already in place that bring forth this type of discussion where you missed it, not in the 2020 election. You were already late.
We really are so bad at playing this long game, or even just conceptualizing the battlefield strategically. We don't see it. So the example that I use is what's currently going on right now with the January 6th special investigation hearings.
Mm-hmm.
All this energy is put into this to hold someone accountable for January 6th. The Justice Department should be holding what it looks like, based on the hearings, the person who was most responsible, which is the 45th president of the United States. Now,
it was a whole ass coup, y'all.
People want this to happen. They want him to be held accountable. And let's say that the Special Investigation Committee does their job and illustrates to the nation that he was responsible. And then the Justice Department comes behind them and does their job and prosecutes. And by some miracle, the president is convicted and what? Goes to jail or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of a Republican candidate that would not pardon that president should they win. And I am not trusting that the Democrats will continue to hold office in perpetuity so that that Republican president does not take the seat.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to do all this work, spend all this energy to get the thing that makes you feel good. Yes, someone was held accountable. Watch that motherfucker walk out the door as soon as they take
that's the design. But I mean, taking it with a grain of salt, that is the design of how we set up this pardoning system to work. To your point, I feel like it would be a huge talking point to any serious Republican candidate. You know, I'll pardon that president for the political points that it might score me. And I do think that there would be some satisfaction like, oh, he was finally held accountable or whatever. But he's also an old man. Like, he's not the healthiest person. It's very frustrating. I'm not worried so much about the figurehead. I see him kind of as a figurehead of this, of these ideas and ideals that also need to be overcome, right? So we could say, you know, do something with him, but also do something with this pervasive energy that is bringing about the actions. Yeah, he got on the mic and said a whole bunch of stuff, but he got on the mic and said a whole bunch of stuff to people who were primed and had been conditioned to listen for it. That is really the heart of the problem.
So I want to be clear. I'm not saying don't hold the person accountable.
Yeah, do
what
that,
I'm saying
but you
is
gotta do both.
You expect what is going to happen and continue to plan. Like, that's not the end of the thing. You might get a bad mugshot with a toupee missing, you know what I mean? Out of toupee fiasco, you might get that and that'd be good for you. But you got to keep planning. You got to keep working because that ain't going to be the satisfaction that you think it is.
Yeah.
So how is this going to change the country? I am thinking through what these movements towards theocracy look like for our nation. With the Supreme Court decision in Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization, I see people of means actually moving around the country a little bit more to abortion-friendly location.
Mm-hmm.
So blue places are going to get bluer, red places are going to get redder, and then I don't know what that does for our politics.
Or our economics.
Yeah. You also have, I was reading in The Atlantic today, that professionals, which is the code for educated persons,
mm-hmm.
are leaving those hostile abortion areas for blue areas. And so they call that a brain drain for what's going to be left behind as we keep continuing to hear the notion reemerge of states' rights, this mm-hmm. idea that was pre-Civil War. I always ask myself, what do the states want the right to do? Discriminate is the question. Mm-hmm. That's the answer to that question
Whole
every time.
Slaves. Mm-hmm.
Right. So what are these states who are left with their rights that they fought so hard for going to be stuck doing or able to do when they can't build cities of any consequence, when everything mm-hmm. is rural, but also they still have the same amount of power that they had and probably even more so because they got redder.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a problem for us. I'm worried about all type of stuff. Sundown towns, like
some of these things just never went away. And I think that it is responsibility for those people who've always had their eye on the landscape for certain types of threats to just speak about those and speak about them, not even in an alarmist sort of way, like, oh my gosh, right now. It's just more so of a, they exist. They exist. And now you need to have a response for that because the threat is present, right? Mm-hmm. So, no longer, and I think, you know, people who get very passionate about issues, they will be fatigued very quickly because it's going to take more than passion.
You can't keep that up the whole time. You need something else.
It's going to take more than passion to get there. You know, we've talked about this statement, we are not our grandparents. And it's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, we're not that tough.
Yeah. So, okay. So calm down, mm-hmm. right? But you got to learn something about fortitude and resilience. You have to learn something about seeing it through. You have to learn something about foregoing instant gratification for what is right, for what is real, for what can be established into the generations. You're going to have to do your fucking work. Like, that's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's sitting here, I realize what that even means for me. And some of the things that I'm undertaking even right now is because I intend for the next 25 years of my life to look different than the first however many I've been living because I am very much so focused on making sure that I leave the children around me, the young people around me, something that they can run with, that they, you know what I mean, that they can implement, because they can't see what I can see. Likewise, I might not be able to see what they see, but I have to leave them something just like my elders left me something.
Yeah, just enough for them to, whatever you can do for them to pick up and do the work, because you don't know what that work is going to look like. We don't know how that world is going to change once we're no longer impacting it. And so we do not want to live in a white Christian theocracy.
Nope, that's just not good for us.
But as we move that way,
it's not good for white Christians, but that's another
episode. They don't realize it, but we need to think seriously and be prepared to act just as seriously to avoid living in the divided states of America. Let's figure it out. With Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.